When I was a little boy, I still remember my mom telling me a story that has pretty much been with me ever since. It's the story, and it's supposed to be a true story, of the great bishop and saint of the church, Saint Augustine of Hippo, who lived around the 4th or 5th century in North Africa, in the Egypt area. And he was a bishop and a tremendous theologian. And as a theologian, he spent quite a bit of time trying to make sense out of the doctrines that the Catholic Church teaches. Because ever since the apostles began to follow Jesus, the church has always been puzzled. And the puzzled comes from this, that the apostles and Jesus himself were all Jews. They were all Jews. They all believed in one God. That is the basis of what's called monotheism. There is one God. It wasn't like all of the other people around them. All the other people around them were pagans, and they believed in many gods. Sometimes there were hundreds or even thousands of gods. Different cities or families might have individual gods. But the Jews believed in one God. And when Jesus comes along and starts asking his disciples to follow him, Jesus begins making very strange statements. Strange statements that the apostles don't understand and that are very much concerning to the scribes and the Pharisees. So what are these strange statements that he starts making? Well, there's tons of them. But among some of them, to be able to say, "I am the truth." Now, if you remember, he said it in the part, three parts. I am the truth. I am the way. I am life. Now, notice, for me, that's always just taken me aback, because the man is not saying, "I know the truth." He is not saying, "I know the way to live." The way, the truth, and the life. I am life itself. And then when he says things like, if you don't eat of me, if you don't feed on me, if you don't eat my body and blood, you have no life in you. And then another one I'll quote, when he was having a talk with the Pharisees, and he said, they were talking about, "You're not even 50 years old, and you're talking about Abraham as if you knew him." And Jesus then says, "I tell you, before Abraham was, I am." Now, whenever you study scripture, you know that where that "I am" comes from, it should send chills through your body. Because the first time that was uttered was when Moses was, before he delivered the people of Israel, he was working among sheep and he saw the burning bush. And in the burning bush, there was this flame coming out of this bush, and he wouldn't have thought anything of it. It's a bush on fire. But the problem was that the fire was not destroying the bush. It was making it look luminous. And so he thought that was a very strange fire. And so he goes up to it, and he hears a voice say to him, "Come no closer." take your shoes off, for you're standing on holy ground. And when the voice of God tells him from the burning bush to go liberate his people Israel, Moses asks a very normal question. And the normal question was, whom should I say is sending me? And then God, speaking from that bush, says, tell them I am. Now, that's one of my favorite scenes in the whole Bible. Tell them I am sending you. And I always picture Moses going, I am. You are what? Okay? You notice, I was pretty decent in English, but what's missing in that sentence if you diagram it? There's a subject and a verb. There's no object. There's no object. It is, I am. And so Augustine, the person I was telling you the story about, was struggling because Jesus is talking to the God of Israel, who is one God, but at the same time, he is making statements that only a person who says they were God would make. It's like C.S. Lewis, a great Christian author, would always say, look, either Jesus, when he says stuff like that, Jesus is either a liar, a lunatic, or he is the Lord. And so here is Jesus standing, using words that were only uttered by the burning bush and by the God of Israel. And yet he is constantly talking to his Father. Now, there's one God, but here Jesus is identifying with God and yet talking to his Father. So all of a sudden, the apostles began saying, wait a minute, there's one God, but there seems to be two. And then, during the time that Jesus was with us continually, he promised to send us the Spirit, so that when he entered into heaven, he would not leave us alone. He would send us the Holy Spirit. So all of a sudden, the apostles are faced with, we're still Jews. We still believe in one God. But there seems to be three persons. And the church struggled with that because that's what Jesus had taught us. And that's, after the struggle, we gave it a name. Because that's why you won't find the word Trinity in the Bible. Because it was a name we gave the mystery. And so Augustine, this man, this bishop I was telling you about, was walking down the beach one day, and he was thinking about how can we believe in three persons that are one. And he, as he's thinking about this and walking near the beach, he sees in front of him a young boy. And the young boy has a tiny little bucket. It's big. And he takes the bucket, and Augustine can see him in front of him. He's running between the ocean, and he's made a hole in the sand. And he is taking the water from the ocean and running over and putting it in the little hole. Then he takes the little bucket again and he does the same thing, and he comes back and does the same thing. And Augustine sees him back and forth and back and forth. So finally, when he comes up to him, he asks the little boy, what are you trying to do? And the little boy says, well, I want to put the ocean into that hole by using my bucket. And Augustine begins laughing. You can't do it. You just can't. The ocean's too vast. And at that moment, Augustine relates that he heard a voice saying to him, "Then how is it that you are expecting to comprehend the eternal mystery of God in that hole you call your mind?" I've never forgotten that story because as I have gotten older and I am passionately interested in theology and in philosophy. But the reason that I'm passionately interested is because in being present to this God, as I have experienced him in my life, he is a God that is total mystery. In other words, now, when I use the word mystery, don't understand it the way when in secular culture, when you understand the word mystery, you understand like a mystery movie, and then when you find out who done it, you solved the mystery. In theology, that's not the way we use the word mystery. I had a professor one time that gave me the best definition. He said, mystery in theology is infinite comprehensibility. Now just put those two words next to each other in your mind. Infinite comprehensibility. Basically, the more you understand, the more you understand that there's more to understand. And what we celebrate today is the essence of who God is, but we can only imagine, and the imagination is just so deep, because the more you understand that there's more to understand. And so I just want to make it short today, because I have a couple of other things I need to talk to you about. But just remember that the problem that most of us have with God is really can be diagnosed as a poverty of the imagination. Most of us, another friend of mine put it this way. He said, God made us in his image and likeness, and ever since, we continue doing that to him. We make God up in our minds, in our image and likeness. And the problem is that it's the poverty of your imagination. You and I do not have the mental capacity to be present to the God that created this universe in any way to try and understand him. There is just no way. So it could, if we stayed there, being in the presence of this great unknown could literally scare the bejeebies out of us. I mean, imagine, I've tried to figure out this, just a way to communicate. Imagine that you are told to enter into a room, and the room, as you enter into it, the door closes behind you, and the room is 100% pitch black. And you are invited, somehow, something tells you that you must walk into the darkness. Total darkness. Would you be scared? I would. You can't see anything. You're walking in, you don't know if there's even floor ahead of you. And if we had to approach God the God of the Trinity without him having told us a bit about himself, we would be scared to death. As a matter of fact, that's why the ancient peoples, even without knowing that God was Trinity, were scared to death of gods, because they thought that the gods could do anything to them that they wanted. That's why they use sacrifices. You know, when you're scared of someone, you offer them gifts so that they won't harm you. And so when the genius of Christianity, which is God himself, because Christianity, we didn't create this. God himself created the faith that we believe in. I always like to think of it this way, that God knew that we didn't know who he was. And he said, I need to tell you who I am. And so God became one of us so that we could see him, quote, in familiar terms. It's kind of like when you kneel before a baby, you make lots of efforts to kind of talk baby talk and to use exaggerated voice and exaggerated facial expressions. Because if you talked like an adult, the baby would never understand. So you got to make lots of noise, positive noises. I think God, compared to God, we're less than babies. But he loves us. And so he didn't want to scare us. And so he said, okay, I'm going to come. What's that old saying? If you want something done right, you do it yourself. Well, I think God invented that. Because he said, let me show you who I am. But I want to show you in a way that won't freak you out. And that's what he did. And slowly he began to reveal himself. And even when he reveals himself, we still don't understand. And I'm going to close with this. Suppose you're back in that dark room. And suppose you're supposed to walk forward into total darkness. But what if in that dark room you hear a very gentle voice that says, I'm here. It's okay. Trust me. Take another step. Take another step. And each step you take, you find that he's telling you the truth. And he says, follow my voice. And you continue to listen to see where he is. And you follow his voice. You're still in the dark, but you're not really, because you know you're not alone. And because you know you're not alone, even though you can't explain who's calling you forward, your experience begins telling you that it's somebody who cares about you and doesn't wish any harm, but wishes only your good. I think that's an analogy as to where we are. We know much more about God because Jesus told us. But there's still that infinite comprehensibility where we walk forward and we go, we can only see a little bit, but we trust you. We trust you because even when we took your life and killed you in the most horrible way, when you could have looked at all of us and said, Father, to hell with all of them. The words that came out of your mouth were, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. If you forgave us when we did that to you, we trust you. And that's what we're celebrating today. The vision of a God that we do not understand. The vision of a God who has revealed himself to us. But even in his revelation, he still remains shrouded in mystery. And remember what mystery is: infinite comprehensibility. But at the in the middle of all of that, in the middle of all that darkness, there's still this gentle voice that we've come to trust. And the gentle voice says, "Come forward, follow me." And we trust that voice. That is the voice of God speaking through the darkness of our human understanding.